Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Speak Beastie for September 25th, 2016.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Megan.
I'm Eleanor.
And we have a special guest today. It's a listener, Allie. Woo. Allie, say hi.
Hi.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am from Columbus, Ohio. My Hogwarts house is a Hufflepuff, and I'm very proud.
Yay. I'm not Hufflepuff, but I'm just being supportive.
What house are you again?
Gryffindor.
That's okay.
Oh, wait, where are you? What's yours, Shannon?
I'm a Ravenclaw.
Oh, I'm a Slytherin! Guys!
Representation. Yay! That's what I like.
Finally, the perfect episode. I'm sure this has happened before.
My Ilvermorny house is Puckwudgie, or however you say that.
Pretty good.
I got started with Harry Potter when I think I was like 10 or something. My brother really wanted to go see the Harry Potter and Sorcerer's Stone, and it was a family tradition to go to the movies for Christmas. But it ended up being around Thanksgiving. So he was like, let's go see Sorcerer's Stone. I was like, okay, that looks cool, whatever. So we went and saw it, and I absolutely loved it. And then I stole all of his books and read the entire series and haven't put it down since.
So Allie is one of our Patreon sponsors, and she's in the Speak Beastie Common Room, which is a pretty cool place, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's where all the awesome things happen.
Sometimes we talk about, like, intelligent theories, but mostly we're just like, look at this Sasquatch pizza I found.
It really is mostly Sasquatches.
Yeah. Because, like, what else do you need?
Absolutely nothing.
Food schmood.
Thank you for being on the show with us, Allie.
Yeah.
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Speak Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. But wait, there's more! Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. We want to thank all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Our next goal is to get merchandise. Check out Patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
It is time for the Phoenix Register. Starting with the thing I'm most excited about, we are hosting a panel at New York Comic Con.
Yay!
Hi! On Sunday, October 9th. From 10:45 to 11:45 a.m. in room 1A21. So if you're going to be at New York Comic Con, please come see us. We're so excited.
Yeah. Who's going to be there?
I'm going to be there. That should be enough for you. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to have Ariel. We're going to have Lizzie. We're going to have Elena. We're going to have Ashley, one of our producers. And Kat, is that it? I think that's it.
I don't know. Because I'm not going.
Right.
Neither am I. I'm sorry
if I left anyone out, but I'm pretty sure that's the panel.
But sounds like a pretty good panel.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
So yes, there's like a lot of news this week. Like we're getting closer to the film coming out, which feels kind of surreal. And
this like thing happened where like we went to the set.
Right.
We didn't.
Jessica did. But we were represented by Jessica.
Many moons ago. Before we started this podcast, I think.
So, combine all those things and you just have like a lot of Fantastic Beasts information. So, I'm not going to hit on all of it. We're going to talk about a lot of it in main discussion. But definitely go to MuggleNet and read up on all of her articles that she got when she visited the set. Because she wrote some really nice stuff about it. She went into some cool details. And also, Shannon interviewed her on our last little bonus episode. Mm-hmm. So if you missed that last week, you should totally listen to it. Also, EW Pop Fest just got even more fantastic. Wink, wink.
Ooh.
In addition to special screenings, signings, and previews at the two-day event, Eddie Redmayne will take the stage to reveal an exclusive sneak peek of Harry Potter prequel. Who wrote this? EW. It's not.
Wow.
To reveal an exclusive sneak peek of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. It's good that I read what I'm about to say. Because yeah. But yeah, so if you're going to EW Pop Fest, I'm jealous. And you're going to get to see Eddie Redmayne reveal some clips from Fantastic Beasts. And if you're not going, then we'll talk about them afterwards. So never
And
fear.
That's like the end of October, isn't it?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have to wait that long to see the movie. I can't believe the movie's coming out so soon. I'm not going to harp on this for like... until it comes out.
How many episodes do we have between it coming out?
Oh,
hold on.
Geez.
So this week, and then math. Okay,
calendar.
This episode, 2, 3. So we have 4 episodes. We have 4 episodes before it happens.
So is it too early for me to start freaking out? Like, are people going to get sick of hearing it by the time we actually get there?
No, because you're not going to be on every episode, so you can keep freaking out about it.
Oh, that's true. This is probably my last episode before it comes out.
Maybe.
Maybe. Oh, God. Wow. Okay. Anywho.
How does it feel, Megan?
It feels really weird. I don't like it. There's also new Funko Pop figures for Fantastic Beasts, and they're so cute. We have Newt, who I think was already released, but then we also have Tina.
Well, it's a new version of Newt.
He has an egg. My bad.
Instead of the case.
Is anyone
but
playing,
they're releasing
like...
a keychain version of him with the case.
Gotcha. So there's a mysterious egg.
Anyone play like Pokemon Go?
I used to.
Yes.
You know Spark, like from the Team Instincts? He's like always has an egg. Mm-hmm. Sounds like exactly the same as Newt. Except Pokemon.
Newt.
Anyway.
He would be Team
Pokemon Instinct. Fantastic Beast crossover, then.
Anyway.
Could see it. There's Tina, there's Queenie, there's Jacob. And apparently with Jacob, you could take off his little hat, which I love for some reason. Percival Graves. I've never called him Percival. It's weird. Serafina Pickery. And a couple of little Nifflers.
Oh, no.
Ah. They're so cute. We also got the Patronus quiz from Pottermore this week.
Yeah.
And yay!
Day of recording.
It was like a really cool quiz. Like, even if you didn't like your result, the quiz itself was really cool.
It did look cool.
I took it on my phone, and I wish I had waited until I was on a desktop.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it did all these swooshy things.
It still did all that, so I think it was pretty much the same.
Okay.
But I think it would have been a cooler experience.
Did you get the music? Because I forgot, like, I didn't even think of, like, turning the sound up on my phone to get music.
Yeah, but then I didn't like it, so I turned it down. I had just woken up. Like, that was what I woke up for. So what did everybody get on the Patronus quiz? What kind of beast are you?
I got a ginger cat. Which I'm, like, trying to be okay with. Like, it's a house cat, but it's, I mean, I don't know. It could probably defend me if I needed it to.
I guess.
You would hope so.
Crookshanks was meant to be, like, half ginger cat, half nasal or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I also read that ginger cats are, like, the friendlier of the house cats. Like
that's cool.
They're like cuddly and lovable, but then they're still cats, so they like go hide behind furniture. And I was like, I think that I can relate to that. Like sometimes I want to hang out, but then sometimes I'm like, leave me alone. Need to go sit in the dark.
Well, I got a pine marten,
which is pretty.
Don't sound too excited.
I've never seen one before in my life, so I was like, okay, I'll go with it. They look really cute. I'm just very like. I don't know anything about this animal whatsoever, so.
That was what J.K. Rowling originally got, right?
Yeah. And then she changed it.
She can retake the quiz, unlike everyone else.
I don't believe in retaking the quizzes. Everyone else does, and I just don't believe, I feel like that's cheating.
Yeah, neither.
Yeah.
Like, I retook the quizzes a few times, and, you know, you always get different houses and different ones and stuff, and you're just like, look, just go with the first one.
All right.
Well, then, Allie and I got the same thing, and we got a gray squirrel.
Yeah. Not my favorite animal, that's for sure.
Well, so when I was in Canada, I saw some, like, dark gray black squirrels, and I was like, that's the coolest thing in the world, and...
Right, I've seen some black brown ones.
I'm trying to read about... Right now, if you Google gray squirrel, the first suggestion is gray squirrel Patronus. I'm like, yes, actually.
Support group?
Aren't the gray squirrels, like, the ones that, like, have basically taken over the red squirrel's territory and they're, like, massive pests in England?
Oh, no, yeah, that is...
Maybe.
That is the squirrel that's, like, outside. They,
yeah, they are an invasive species in Britain.
So I guess we're invasive species.
Yay! Yeah.
They're hoarders. I don't know if you hoard things, Allie.
No, not really.
I have a lot of stuff on my desk.
So do I, actually.
The squirrels have very accurate spatial memory.
Okay.
So they remember where their caches of food are.
I'm like that with my clothes. If it's all on the floor, my room is a mess, and I'm like, oh, I know exactly where that article of clothing is, even though it's buried under three other articles of clothing.
Exactly. I agree with this philosophy.
The eastern gray squirrel is one of the few mammalian species that can descend a tree head first.
That's pretty cool.
So we got that.
Woo!
We can climb down trees head first.
Can pine martens do that?
I don't know.
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't even know what that is.
They can! Ha! I can do it too. It's not that special.
So you're just overall like us, but cooler.
Well, more bitey, I think I would probably go with.
Yeah, it's carnivorous.
Yeah. And they're apparently... Yeah, they're apparently very, very, like, introverted, these, like, weird little animals. And I'm like, that's the most opposite of me ever. I need, like, constant, you know, like, acknowledgement.
Anyway. Okay, but are you, like, a European pine marten or an American pine marten?
See, they don't tell you that.
They're, or a Newfoundland pine marten?
I don't know. I'm like, you guys get to know, like, that you're a ginger cat. And I am...
Were you an African or European squirrel?
Nice.
Thank you.
But yeah, I don't know. Very confusing quiz. Also, I don't like the fact that you don't get like a description of what your Patronus means.
That's kind of weird.
But I kind of went into it thinking like, okay, your Patronus like isn't, I don't know. I never felt like, oh, what is my Patronus? Like, I never felt like that was a big question for me because I didn't think it really mattered.
Well, and I guess, like, IRL, if you cast a Patronus, there would be no, like, piece of paper that fell down that was like, here's an explanation as to why this is your Patronus. Like,
yeah.
It just is what it is.
Your Patronus can change. And then it's hard in the first place to make a corporeal Patronus, so...
Let's be real, I probably wouldn't be able to make one in the first place.
It's gonna compliment That's everyone your was always abuse. Begging.
Everyone was always begging for a Patronus quiz, and I was like, I don't really care. But I took
it. Did you guys have like a Patronus before the quiz came out?
No.
Really? I always figured it'd be some kind of bird, but I never was like, this is definitely my Patronus.
I really like owls, so I was like, maybe an owl, but I never really actually thought it would be an owl.
Oh.
So I just dropped something.
Well, you're fired.
That's why I'm not an owl. They don't drop things like this. Squirrel would tell
me. I don't know. Errol would. Probably.
Well, shall we move on to owl posts, speaking of?
Do it.
Who does
Allie,
that?
Take us away.
Okay. All right. So we've got some owl posts. First one is from Lindsay Riddle, who says, listening to Newt Shot First episode right now, and I have a Harry Potter Agatha Christie connection for you. In Ollivanders, in Diagon Alley at Universal, on the Wandkeeper's desk between the wand experience and the shop itself, is an Agatha Christie novel. You'll get in trouble for touching things if someone sees you, but it's there. Most of the other books, which are all real, are in Latin.
Ooh.
Cool. I'm
trying to, like, imagine that room.
On the wand keeper's desk between the wand experience and the shop itself.
Well, that's cool.
That's awesome.
I wonder what novel.
I wonder if they did that on purpose. If everything else is in Latin, they probably did.
Yeah, and also, like, J.K. Rowling's all about, you know,
yeah.
When she talks about Strike, she's always like, I'm basically a crime writer, and Agatha Christie's the most prolific... Is that right? The most prolific, like, female crime writer?
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I think she... She beats, Jane Austen. I remember that.
Jane Austen does not have a lot of books.
Yeah, it's true.
She also... None of them are really crime books.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember what the question was.
Let's see.
It was something like she's like the most incredible female writer, most like. Oh, I don't think it was female. Maybe she was just the most like distributed writer. I think. Anyway,
don't worry.
Let's see. She has 66 detective novels and 14 short story collections. That she wrote under her own name, which have sold over 2 billion copies, an amount only surpassed by the Bible and the works of William Shakespeare.
Wow.
Oh, there you go. Most prolific writer.
So, yeah, she's legit.
She's legit.
Now that we've decided it on Speak Beastie.
We deem Agatha Christie legit.
She gets the legit stamp.
So, next up is Buckbeak. Is my spirit animal. Maybe it's his Patronus too. We don't know.
That'd be cool.
Find out, hopefully. Let us know.
Right back.
But hippogriffs can be Patronuses. Someone got one.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Could be true.
Magical Patronuses are very rare. Like magical
beasts. Didn't Ashley get a dragon or something on her second try?
Yeah.
Someone got a Thestral on MuggleNet.
Oh, there was like a whole question about that, like, what if you had never seen death? Would you be able to see your own Patronus? And would other people be able to see your Patronus if gets very in-depth.
That's too much.
That hurts
That's
my brain. I can't. Go ahead, Ellie. Sorry.
It's okay. So Buckbeak is my spirit animal says, in regards to the notebooks, I suspect that they are Mina Lima. They said somewhere that the Fantastic Beasts screenplay was designed by them, and the designs of the creatures on the cover that are the same as the designs in the poster book are the same designs as the spells on these notebooks. So definitely not definitive, but I think there's a good chance. Also, are we sure that Michael Gambon won't be playing Dumbledore? We see a relatively young Dumbledore through his memories when he visits Tom Riddle for the first time. That was like 1938. I guess that was a 12-year difference from this movie, but he's still relatively young there.
Hmm.
Well, yes, I believe Mina Lima designed
the
notebook. Some good deduction there.
Yeah.
And then...
We don't know.
I don't know. Do we think Michael Gambon could play young Dumbledore? If we see young Dumbledore?
I think it's unlikely.
Yeah.
It sounds very unlikely.
Because he's only getting older.
Yeah, I still haven't decided if we're going to see a young Dumbledore, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
If we did, I feel like it might have to be in the second or third movie, you know? Like, they might not even have cast that yet.
Yeah.
My instinct wants to say it would be someone else, but I would love it if it were Michael Gambon.
Yeah, but, like... Oh, yeah, I mean, make him look that much younger...
Maybe, you know, we'll see like a flashback to, you know, like younger Newt, but Dumbledore's there, but you never actually like see Dumbledore. Like you just see like his hand or like the back of his head.
Yeah.
Like Jesus in Ben-Hur. Then you see Dumbledore without seeing Dumbledore, and it doesn't really matter who you cast. At least like if you did it in the first movie. Because then you can see how it goes over, and then in the third movie, you can bring him back and cast a famous actor.
Yeah.
Well, what about that guy who played young Dumbledore in that just photograph with Grindelwald.
It's true. They would probably not bring him back.
Yeah, unlikely. He's probably some random actor. Still!
He's probably more of a model.
Yeah.
That's generally how it goes when you're, like, casting photographs. But yeah, we have an image of young Dumbledore. So, like, if you have a young Dumbledore in these movies and it doesn't look like the young Dumbledore in that photograph, then is it canon?
Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to be saying pretty soon that Fantastic Beasts will have their own canon, the Harry Potter movies will have their own canon, yeah. First Child will have its own canon, etc.
There is no canon.
Canon doesn't exist.
It's fictional. I've resolved the debate of last episode.
So next is Jesse, who says, when I was learning French in college, I would read some Harry Potter chapters in French as a learning exercise. The word for muggle is moldu, or moldu with an E. In French, nouns have gender, so if it's a male muggle, it's spelled without an E. If it's a female muggle, it's spelled with an E. If it's a group of female muggles, it's spelled an E and an S. And if it's a male group or a mixed group, it's spelled with no E, just S. If that sounds confusing to you, the E's and the S are silent, so they're all pronounced the same way.
Great.
Okay.
I had to ask my brother about this because he took French in high school, and he took it all throughout high school, and he's like, yeah, so it'd all be pronounced the same way because of the U. And I was like, okay, cool.
Yep.
So I wonder if
I did French for ages. Yep.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
That's rude that they call muggles moldy.
Moldy. Moldy
muggles. I wonder, like, where that word comes from.
Well.
In French. I never thought about how, like, muggle would be translated into different languages.
Oh, you will be so excited. Oh my God. I have an entire, like, whole thing on, I think, the Finnish translation and the Afrikaans translation. Right. It's all coming, bro.
Oh, it is always interesting to see what excites Eleanor.
What does that mean?
I have the Latin translations.
I have that one.
I
got to read it.
I have a copy of a chapter. The Philosopher's Stone that I got at Waterstones.
Oh, well.
It's very exotic.
See, the only other language I know is American Sign Language, and they don't have a book for that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do not know a lot of Latin. I knew more Latin when I bought the Latin Harry Potter books, but not so much now.
Yeah, I don't know anymore.
All right, so let's move into the main discussion.
Yay!
So, as we mentioned, MuggleNet, in the form of Jessica, visited the set of Fantastic Beasts, and the embargo was just lifted, so she got to release all of these awesome articles, and there were interviews with, like, all of the main cast, and also David Heyman and David Yates and Stuart Craig, and also she had an article about Beasts that she saw concept art of, and just a couple articles about the actual sets that she visited. So there was a lot of material.
Much material.
And we cannot cover it all in one episode. So today, we're just going to talk about what we kind of learned from the cast interviews. And we got to give a shout out to Lane in the Speak Beastie Common Room, because she gave us some amazing comments. Yeah. And I kind of have them sprinkled in here. So thank you, Lane.
Thanks, Lane.
So let's see. We're going to talk about Eddie Redmayne first. You know, this little known actor, Eddie, as I like to call him.
Little Eddie.
He's playing Newt Scamander.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. What a weird
Newt
name.
Newt Salamander? What?
Newt Salamander. So here's some of the stuff that Eddie said. And so Eddie came to his interview and he was in costume and he showed off his wand. Most of the actors showed off their wands. So that's pretty cool. But we have in the article pictures of Newt's wand. So you should go check that out. It's very pretty.
It just blown right past my fourth grade innuendos.
I was like, I'm just gonna pretend she's not laughing.
Fair enough.
So, Eddie said, I got to meet J.K. Rowling, so I had about 3 or 4 months prepping the film, and just about a month before we started filming, I was here in Leavesden, and J.K. Rowling came, and it was this sort of brilliant or slightly odd moment in which David Yates introduced her, and I knew that she was only going to be there for an hour, and I think I was like, hello, nice to meet you, and just basically grilled her for an hour. So Eddie asked J.K. Rowling a lot of questions, which is good.
Yeah.
And all of the other actors mentioned that they, like, had just gotten to meet J.K. Rowling a couple days before this interview. So they did not get to meet her a month before filming and ask a bunch of questions in the same way that Eddie did, which is interesting.
I wonder what he asked her.
I know.
He's such a professional, he probably just asked about his character the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I bet if it were me, I would have been like, so wait, and I would have, like, fangirled and then asked her all these Harry Potter questions. But I guarantee you he sat there and was like, what are Newt's parents like? Like,
yeah.
Who's Newt's favorite beast?
Yeah. What's Newt's favorite TV show?
Dude.
What's his favorite TV show?
What would it be?
He's in La Toile.
Yeah, he doesn't watch TV.
Okay, so then he talked a little bit about the creatures, which is exciting, obviously, because it's about beasts. And so with each of the creatures, what was important for me was that Newt has a different relationship with them, but also that they have a relationship with each other. They all live down in this case, and I think he's in some way parenting their relationship with each other. For example, Pickett, who's one of my favorite characters, he has attachment issues, so he always has to be in my pocket.
Is that the Niffler?
That is the bow truckle.
Oh, mm-hmm. Pickett the bow truckle.
Oh, no.
And when he comes up onto the shoulder, I started by having a puppeteer come with literally a finger puppet doing it, feeling what that was like. And then they had a long pole with Pickett made out of wire on the end. And then eventually, when we actually film, he's not there. But by that time, you have a sense of him and you can play with him. Then sometimes, like tonight, we're doing a second unit thing with just a baboon in Central Park Zoo. But the baboon's not going to be there. I find it was actually much easier to work with totally nothing and to sort of improvise with yourself.
Oh, my God.
So that's interesting.
I need a bow truckle.
I know. Pickett.
Named Pickett.
That's such a cute name.
A baboon. There's like all and these like mythical creatures and then just a baboon.
Well, that's, I'm sure we'll talk another day about the actual sets, but Central Park Zoo was like, they, like, we found out that they're going to be in Central Park Zoo at some point and I was like, of course.
Yeah.
How did I never think that they would go there?
Yeah.
With the baboon.
The baboon.
It's a magical baboon. I'm calling it right now.
Okay. Place your bets, folks.
Oh, no, but will it, though? Or will it just be Newt being like, oh, it must be magical. It looks so interesting. And then it's just like, no, no, it's not. All the muggles can see it. They like
I
it.
I think.
Stop.
Or is he like Eliza Thornberry, where like he can just communicate with all animals?
Oh, yeah.
Aw.
Because he's a wizard.
He is a wizard.
I think the baboon escapes.
Just but the baboon, creature... nobody else?
No, I think a lot of other animals escape. I think there was some other thing that led me to believe this even more that made it sound like some beast is loose in Central Park Zoo and releases all the other beasts.
Oh.
The baboon helps him find the escaped beast.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be cute. Ah, fan art of Newt with a baboon on his shoulder. Someone draw that.
On his shoulder?
Well, not just, like, sitting on his shoulder, like, on both of his shoulders, like, riding there.
Oh, my God.
In a cute way.
I was like, Shannon, I don't think you understand what a baboon looks like.
All right, forget I said anything. Let's see, who else do we have? So, like, a lot of the actors didn't really reveal a lot of stuff. So she talked a little bit about how she feels Queenie has a sort of strength in femininity, because people asked her about being a female character.
Really?
That was basically what the question comes down to. But she talked about how she didn't really grow up seeing a lot of feminine characters who were also strong characters, and so she feels like Queenie's a character like that, and I think that's cool.
Nice.
She talked about first meeting Catherine Waterston, who of course plays her sister, Tina, and that they had immediate chemistry and they cried. Which is pretty
adorable.
Cute. And she mentioned meeting J.K. Rowling. And she said that, like, everybody was asking her questions and she kind of felt like, oh, I don't want to, like, also ask her questions. Which I was like, who are you, Alison Sudol? But she said that it's okay because there's a lot on the page about Queenie. So, like Lane said, hopefully we get to see her a lot in the screenplay, literally on the page. Well, I'll mention Catherine Waterston. She said like nothing. she was so nervous to like say anything. She kept saying stuff like, "Oh, I'm not allowed to say that." bless her heart.
But as if you wouldn't be that like must that, be, like in that situation.
That must be hard.
Yeah.
To try to remember what you're allowed to talk about and what you're not. I wouldn't like that.
And then it's like there's some stuff that it seems like they weren't allowed to talk about it, but now we know it.
Yeah.
Because this was so long ago. But she still had a good interview. Just like nothing, no like new information. Whereas Colin Farrell said this thing that I was like, what? Quote, the relationship with, someone asked him about his relationship with Newt. And he said, the relationship with Eddie's character, Newt. I've corresponded with Newt's brother, who's a very, very powerful auror also, at the other side of the Atlantic, called Theseus, who's a commander. And so I don't know Newt, but knowing his brother, initially there's a fondness, and then there might be a little bit of tension.
Wow.
And I literally said out loud, what?
Yeah.
What?
Okay. That was curveball.
Theseus, so, commander.
Theseus.
Newt has a brother named Theseus.
Okay.
And he's,
what do we do with this information?
I don't know.
Oh.
But this explains his little voiceover where he's like, I know you've been expelled, basically. That's how he knows.
Yeah.
Because he's friends with Newt's brother. I assume older brother.
Harry Potter Wikia says, Theseus Scamander was a human male.
Well done.
He was a British wizard who lived during the early 20th century, worked as an auror with the British Ministry of Magic, and was described as powerful. He had at least one sibling, a brother Newt, who eventually became a famous magizoologist. In 1926, Theseus corresponded with Percival Graves, the director of magical security of the Macusa, about recent events in New York, presumably the chaos caused by Theseus's brother's escaped creatures. So,
Theseus, dude, you will not believe what your brother just did.
Oh.
So that's interesting.
Curveball, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is like, I don't know. I feel like that was like the most out of nowhere information that I found in all of this. I was like, what?
It's annoying though, because it sounds really cool, but I've got a feeling it's just going to be one of those random little tidbit things, because otherwise, why would he be left to say
it? The lexicon says Graves was initially friendly with Newt because he knew his brother, although their friendship soured when Newt's magical creatures escaped into New York. So, their dynamic may be changing throughout the series. Mm.
It's the
lexicon. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know where they got it from. So
yeah, I don't know if they're just assuming that from this one quote. I wonder if we'll meet Theseus. Not necessarily in this movie, but he sounds cool.
Sounds like a meathead.
Yeah.
Arr, Theseus.
Sounds like he would probably know Dumbledore, though.
Yeah.
He's a commander.
Everybody knows Dumbledore.
That's true, according to Mrs. Speak. But, like, as in he might have actually had to work with Dumbledore to, like, deal with Grindelwald or something, which could be cool.
And I wonder, like, how he and Graves met. Like, are they pen pals? Like, how did that happen?
Because Graves isn't British, is he?
No, he's American.
But they're both Aurors.
Yeah. So did they have to, like, America, did Makusa and Ministry of Magic have to, like, team up at some point?
Well, this was just after World War One.
That's
maybe
true.
Maybe there was some sort of international wizard type of
that would be cool.
System for that.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then we have Ezra Miller, who, I mean, Jessica says in her article, like, he can't reveal anything. So the first, like, question, someone says something about his mother and he interrupts them to say, I cannot confirm or deny whether or not my character has now or has ever had a mother.
Wow.
So,
like, why are you talking to the press? What's the point of this?
Yeah, because he's young and adorable.
Yeah.
As Lane said, he's so adorable, such a fanboy. So he was really excited about magic and, like, having an action figure eventually. It's a really fun interview, even though you learn nothing. Then we have Dan Fogler's interview. He is the last actor, and he plays Jacob. And I felt like his didn't have any drops like Newt's brother Theseus, but it had the most interesting information to me. So first of all, we kind of found out that Jacob is poor, which I think, I mean, we could basically infer, but we, like, know for sure. Dan describes him as incredibly optimistic, and I think because he's back from World War One, he's seen some monsters, he's seen some chaos, and so he's desensitized in that regard. And he's also the kind of guy who's so loyal. He is super loyal. So I felt like when he was in the war, they gave him an order, and no matter what it was or how ridiculous it was, he did it. He focused on it, and he put his intention on it, and he just finished it no matter how hard it was. And then he went on and kept talking about how loyal he was. So Jacob is loyal. He'd be a Hufflepuff, I assume.
Woo!
So, and that was kind of the first time I think we confirmed
quote.
What?
There's a lot of heart. He gets swept up in this whole world. He falls in love with it, but then he can't stay, and it's really quite heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sad.
I'm interested to see how that'll pan out.
Yeah.
Because, like, they can't erase his memory, can they?
No, I don't want to.
Yes, they can. Anyone seen Doctor Who? We all know that can happen.
Shut up, you Slytherin. They're not going to
Well,
do
I
that.
Think... I don't remember what context I said this in, but I think that, like, Newt and Jacob, like, pretend to erase his memory.
I hope so.
And he doesn't actually erase his memory. But then he still can't, like, stay in the magical world. What?
That's even worse. It'd be better to, like, just not know anything as opposed to, like, knowing what you can't have.
That's true.
Yeah.
But there's gonna be two more movies, so surely he comes back.
I'm just going to cry regardless.
Okay.
I'm just going to plan that now.
Cool.
We also found out that when we knew he got bit by a beast. When he gets bit, it's on the neck, which I was imagining like his finger, but it's his neck, which in the interview he came in costume too, and he had like the makeup for the bite on.
Ooh.
Yeah, gross. Ouch.
Vampire beast.
He befriends, someone asked him if he, like, has a special connection with any of the beasts, and he befriends the demiguys.
Aww.
Which is cute. The demiguys doesn't really trust a lot of people, but he trusts Jacob.
Aww.
Isn't that nice? And then, of course, he's in love with Queenie. Like, we totally could tell that. Which I think Allison Sudol mentioned something about, like, how they hit it off.
I've decided Jacob's my favorite.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
And then another interesting quote I had from him was he was talking about Newt, and he said, he's really the only British character in New York in the film. One of the only. And I was like, one of the only?
Dun, dun, dun.
So that means surely there's another British character. I don't know if that's significant, but...
Theseus.
Theseus. Theseus.
Theseus.
Theseus is my favorite character. So that is some of the, like, new information or interesting things we learned from the interviews. And then Lane left this huge comment about all of their wands, because we kind of got a description of almost everyone's wand, because most of the actors had the wands with them. So I'm going to read her comment. I wrote about Newt's wand a while ago on the site comments, but the gist of his wand symbolism might come down to elements and being earthy and watery and Hufflepuffy and emotional and things. The Nautilus shell on Queenie's wand is cool. It's made from pearly materials, and the Nautilus represents growth and moving forward. The actual creature, the Nautilus, grows out of the chambers in the shell, and it has to create a new one it fits into, so it's always going forward and it cannot move backward. Queenie might have had negative things in the past, but she's always moving on and learning and growing. She and Tina raised each other, and that made them both stronger and more successful adults. Pearl represents purity and generosity and loyalty, all things that you learn when you're raising yourself and your sibling. It's also beautiful and feminine, which totally matches what we know of her character. I think Tina's wand, straight and plain, is also interesting. Wood doesn't just grow like that, so even though it's natural looking, it was intentionally carved to be plain. That seems to fit in with her character too. She likes to follow the rules, and she likes to be proper. Something went wrong with her for her to leave the Aura office, and I think she resents that, so her method of getting back into their good graces is by following the rules even better than before. She has to create that straight and proper persona for herself, the same way her natural-looking wand was created to appear straight and plain.
Interesting.
Good analysis.
Yep.
It's too bad we didn't get to see, like, Ezra Miller's wand. I feel like the most we know about his character.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's brown. What does that mean?
I don't know if I've ever seen a pearly wand before.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, but also we're so used to sort of Ollivander doing the wands, whereas when you have different, obviously, wand makers in America, you're going to have a very different style of wand, and they're going to start putting lots of random different materials in there. You know, it could be really cool, because what he was saying is like, oh, I can't tell you what the core is. And I sort of wonder if, like, maybe they put, you know, two types of cores, you know, like, together, or they did, like, you know, they were much more creative.
Or just chop with the it up wands and mix it in there.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
Like a smoothie.
Yeah, like a smoothie. A like wand smoothie. Smoothie.
Exactly the same. So that was the interviews and stuff about the wands. Go read the whole interview, all of the interviews on MuggleNet.com, and let us know if there's anything that you think we missed and that we should talk about. But we will talk more about, like, the beasts and the sets and probably, like, David Heyman and David Yates's and Stuart Craig's interviews in future episodes, because there is just so much stuff and we couldn't cover it all right now. Yeah.
Yay.
So now for the time turner.
Ooh.
Going back in time.
What was that?
Doodle-loodle-loodle-loodle-loo.
Oh, okay.
So, I mentioned on our very first episode, because I think I mentioned Agatha Christie too, I mentioned Harry Houdini. But now I want to talk more about him. I've been saving him because I...
No.
I mean, we could talk about Harry Houdini for, like, hours, because he's such an interesting guy. And clearly a wizard. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
So his real name was Eric Wise. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced, but something like that. We're just going to call him Harry Houdini. He was born in March 24th, 1874, and he died on October 31st, 1926. Just only a couple months before the Fantastic Beasts movie, which is why I bring him up. He was an expert illusionist and escapologist. He could escape stuff. He could pretty much escape everything. He started with handcuffs, but then once he became famous, other people started to escape handcuffs. And so then he needed to do cooler stuff. So then he moved on to, like, wearing a straitjacket upside down underwater and, like, being buried alive and just little stuff like that.
Just silly little things.
You know, one of his most famous early tricks was the Daily Mirror, which is a London newspaper, challenged him to escape these special handcuffs that apparently took a locksmith 5 years to make, and they're super intense. And so it took him an hour and 10 minutes to escape them, which can't have been that much fun to watch. Because you couldn't, you didn't even watch him, like, escape them. He would go in and out of this little screen thing because he didn't want to show how he's escaping them. So he'd, like, go in there for a few minutes and then come out to be like, hey, still here, and then go back. It said on one occasion he asked if they could be removed so that he could take off his coat, and they were like, no, because then you'll see how we'll take them off. And so then he took out a knife and, holding the knife in his teeth, used it to cut his coat from his body. So,
okay.
He really wanted his coat off. I appreciate the effort. And then, so then an hour and 10 minutes, he got out. And so a lot of people think that, because at some point, like, his wife came on stage, supposedly, you know, we just get this all from written accounts, and, like, she kissed him, and so people thought, like, the key was in her mouth, but then it's like, it was a 6-inch key. Probably not. And then someone was like, oh, she gave it to him in a glass of water. I don't know. We don't know how he did it, but he did it. A big thing he started to do was he, like, escaped from an oversized milk can filled with water.
Milk can?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember those, like, there used to be, like, those giant metal things? Anyway.
Huh.
No, I don't.
But sure.
Yeah. His other big trick was Chinese water torture cell. So that's basically, each of these tricks happens when people started to replicate his last trick. So then he was like, psh, handcuffs, what if I'm underwater in a milk can? Psh, milk can, what if I'm Chinese water tortured?
What like kind of trick would that entail?
So Houdini's feet were locked in stocks and he was lowered upside down into a tank filled with water, which had a glass front so people could see him. And the stocks were locked to the top of the cell and a curtain concealed his escape. So he escaped.
That's not Chinese water torture, though.
I don't know why it's called that.
It's not, but
I accept.
And then he did straitjacket. He was buried alive.
The usual.
Stuff like that, you know. He became famous when he toured the U.S. a little bit, and then he toured Europe, and that was kind of his big claim to fame. He did a couple other things. He did just, like, magic tricks sometimes. He vanished an elephant, as you do. He spent a lot of time debunking spiritualists. He also flew planes and was in movies. And then, of course, he died of peritonitis and appendicitis. But peritonitis is inflammation of tissue on the inner wall of the abdomen. So, you know, related to appendicitis. And that was after the pretty famous incident where, like, he was in his dressing room and supposedly this guy was like, hey, isn't it true that, like, punches in the stomach don't hurt you? And then he, like, suddenly punched Houdini in the stomach, and, like, it really hurt. obviously.
Understatement.
And then, like, he got really sick after that, and he was in a lot of pain after that. But it's, like, unclear whether or not that was really that made him worse, or if he already had appendicitis, and it's unclear whether or not the punching actually was, like, what caused him to die, because he probably already had appendicitis.
Well, on Wikipedia, it says, after this happened, he performed even though he was in pain.
Yeah.
Couldn't sleep, remained in constant pain for 2 days, did not seek medical help.
Yeah. And so, then he finally saw a doctor, and the doctor was like, you have a fever and appendicitis, and you should have surgery. And Houdini was like, but I have a show. So he did his final show with a fever of 104 Fahrenheit, 104 degrees Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius. He was reported to have passed out during the show, but was revived and continued, as you do. And then he was hospitalized, and then he died.
Jeezy crazy.
But I think he was in the hospital for a couple days, but...
So a very long, painful, drawn-out death, basically.
Yeah. Mm. I believe it's that his last could words have been were avoided. Like...
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably just... if he took a couple of days off, probably would have been fine.
If he got surgery when the doctor told him to. It's very sad, though. A man is dead.
Although, even if he'd survived that, he'd definitely be dead by now anyway, so... Yeah.
I mean, he was in his 50s. Which, for the time, was, you know, pretty good age. So
people still expected to live till 70, though.
Yeah. I wonder if he'll be mentioned at all in Fantastic Beasts.
In that he was a wizard?
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
That would be cool.
I would like
that. We just lost the greatest wizard of our age.
Or I'm like, maybe they wouldn't, they probably wouldn't like him.
No, he'd be like, yeah, that he'd be like a betrayer because he like lets muggles see like the cool stuff he does. And they'd be like, statute of secrecy.
And they're so secretive in America because of the the Salemers. So like that would be a big no-no.
Well, and then he went around like debunking psychics and stuff. I wonder how that would play into the wizarding world. Were they all real psychics? And they were like, oh man, you cut me out. I'm not real. Magic's not real.
Oh no.
Whoops. I was about to be arrested, but now you've caught me and Macusa won't come after me.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was Harry Houdini. Cool guy.
Cool guy.
Did a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Should probably have calmed down a little bit.
Not someone I would take advice from.
No. Unless the advice was about escaping.
Right.
All right. Let's open the newt case. What's in the newt case today, Eleanor?
Get excited. The only Australian Fantastic Beast that's mentioned in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. They also mention the Antipodean and Opali, but that's actually like in New Zealand. Occasionally it comes across to Australia if that's a dragon. So the only Australian beast is the Billywig, which is basically a glorified insect. Some kind of crazy, by the sounds of things, mosquito type thing. And basically it is rated XXX, so a confident wizard should be able to handle it. It's half an inch long, it has a colouring of vivid sapphire blue, and the speed of the Billywig means that it is rarely noticed by muggles, and wizards and witches only spot it once they have been stung. I would assume muggles would spot it once they've been stung too. But anyway, the Billywig's wings are attached to the top of its head, and the wings rotate extremely fast, spinning the Billywig so that it can fly. It's like a weird little helicopter dude. Xenophilius Lovegood used Billywig wings for his recreation of Rowena Ravenclaw's diadem because he believed they induce an elevated frame of mind, which I think is J.K. Rowling's way of trying to say that Australians are incredibly clever people. and the... It's a very long photo to draw, but I'm going with it. And the billywig also has a long, thin stinger at the bottom of its body. Anyone stung by a billywig will suffer giddiness followed by levitation, and this is what gives the billywig its rating of XXX.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I think it's cool. It, like, makes you just, like, fly for a while. Yeah, and this is why young Australian wizards and witches try to catch billywigs and provoke them into stinging them. Too many stings, however, can cause the victim to hover uncontrollably for days on end. Sometimes the victim will suffer from a severe allergic reaction and permanent floating may ensue. I would not be massively against that. I mean, I guess it could be annoying, but anyway. Also, dried billywig stingers are used in several potions and are believed to be a component in fizzing whizbees, which apparently, according to the annotations by Ron and Harry, Ron has decided he won't be eating fizzing whizbees anymore after that.
Smart move.
I think they sound great. I personally don't think I've seen one, but, you know, maybe one day.
I like them. Sound like fun.
Yeah. Weird little blue insect.
And there we know what it looks like, and we know that it's going to be in the movie.
Yeah. More to the point. I'm like, why is an Australian one in America? Anyway.
Well, it probably escaped from his case.
Well, that means he went to Australia. So will he come back to Australia?
Why would he? I don't know. It's already been there.
I want to know. Anyway.
Is it just me, or does it seem like it's saying a nice way to say that young Australian wizards and witches are trying to do drugs with these billyweeds?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. No, they induce an elevated frame of mind. God.
They're literally floating. They're getting high off of the
They're suffering from giddiness. Wait, permanent floating might happen if you're allergic to a billywig?
Yeah.
Man. Like, that didn't process in my mind until that moment. Sorry. That just seems excessive.
No need for a broomstick.
Yeah.
How high are you floating?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because I thought, like, especially when I was younger, I was like, oh, Link. Yeah, I get it. I get it. Okay. But I'm taking it literally, and I want to know.
I know.
Is it like
a
foot, or is it like 20 feet? Like, what does this mean? Oh, it's fine.
It must not be too high.
It could be helpful for, like, just crossing rivers and stuff. But there are a lot of rivers in Australia. Like, it's relatively useless.
The whole country?
Yeah.
It's useless, or the billywig is useless?
Oh, like, the fact that, like, Australia doesn't have any rivers, so floating would be useless. I mean, we have rivers, but they're not, you know, they're not exciting.
Maybe just crossing, you know, the ocean over to New Zealand.
The street.
The street. Okay, oh, sure. Crossing the fence into
your neighbors.
You
don't have to wait for cars to go by.
It'd be helpful in, like, North Queensland, because they have, like, floods a lot.
There you go.
It'd be helpful.
Anyway. Flood happens, everybody just get high. Float above it.
Literally.
Grab your billywig.
What's the worst that could happen, other than dropping into the water?
Hey, guys, come over to my house. I've got some billywigs for you.
We can let them sting us.
Does the stinging hurt? This sounds like not fun.
And you get to levitate.
Sounds like a lot of stuff could go wrong.
I mean, a sting will hurt for like a millisecond, probably.
What if, like, you stop levitating and, like, fall and hit your head and die?
Well.
Is it worth it?
It comes back to how high are you floating?
Yeah.
It's tough, man.
If you die after falling, like, 6 inches, then... You know.
Then that's your problem.
Yeah, you should have been wearing a helmet. I don't know.
Your skull is susceptible to breakage.
Yeah.
Now we know what the helmet was for.
They were going to get high.
I wonder if anyone in the movie will be stung by a billywig.
Probably. I mean, they have a billywig in it. It's like one of those things of, like, don't put a gun in the room if you're not going to use it type thing.
Yeah.
Billywigs are like guns. That's their significance.
Yeah.
Anyway. I can see Jacob floating around like, wow, I love magic.
The real reason why he says that, because he's high off of billywigs.
So, for our podcast question this week, we're going to stick to the topic that we sort of liked at the beginning, which was, what Patronus did you get, and are you happy with it? Tell us your feelings. We're here for you.
Yeah.
Speak Beastie / giant Harry Potter therapy session.
Yeah.
I need it.
Yeah. Also, don't forget to send us in your fantastic theories, comments, questions, anything really.
Please.
Thanks to everyone who has supported us, especially those of you who bought a Speak Beastie t-shirt.
Yeah.
We got them in the mail and they're really cool. And we will have shirts and more merch again soon. And thank you so much, Allie, for joining us.
Thanks, Allie. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for having me. Yay!
Yay. You did great.
Thank you.
So, if you would like to be on the show like Allie was, be sure to head over to www.patreon, so patreon.com/speakbeastie to find out how. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, on Tumblr, which is speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And remember, guys, that we will, not me, but Megan and all those amazing people,
there.
We'll be at New York Comic Con, so if you live in and around NYC, keep an eye out for the information on how you can come and hang out with us / them. Cool.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Megan.
I'm Eleanor.
Case closed.
And then in addition to that, we just got the Patronus quiz on Pottermore.
The Patronus,
Patronus quiz? I'm sorry. That is one of the things that I always screw up because I said it, I read it in my head as Patronus the whole time until the movies came out and they started saying it differently, so I still screw it up. Anyway, let's do it again.